ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय.
रीडिंग फ्रॉम भगवद गीता एज इट इज चैप्टर 13 टेक्स्ट नंबर 8 टू 12. विल रिसाइट द 8th वर्स. दिस चैप्टर इज एंटाइटल्ड एज द नेचर द एंजॉयर एंड कॉन्शियसनेस. अमानित्वम अदंभित्वा अहिंसा क्षांतिरार्जवा आचार्योपासनम शौच स्थैर्यम आत्मविनिग्रह. द नेक्स्ट टू वर्सेस आर एज फॉलोज. इंद्रियार्तेषु वैराग्यम अन अहंकार एवच जन्म मृत्यु जरा व्याधि दुख दोषाणुदर्शनम असक्तिर अनभिश्वंगः पुत्रदार ग्रहादिषु नित्यं च समचित्तत्वं इष्टानिष्टोपपत्तिषु मयि चान्येन योगेन भक्तिर अव्यभिचारिणी विविक्तदेशसेवित्वं अरतिर जनसंसदि. ट्रांसलेशन फॉर ऑल द वर्सेस. ह्यूमिलिटी प्राइडलेसनेस नॉन वायलेंस टॉलरेंस सिंप्लिसिटी approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth and death, old age and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home and the rest, even-mindedness and amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these are declared to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. We'll read some part of the purport. Tolerance means that one should be practiced to bear insult and dishonor from others. If one is engaged in the advancement of spiritual knowledge, there will be so many insults and much dishonor from others. This is expected because material nature is so constituted. Even a boy like Prahlad, who only 5 years old, was engaged in the cultivation of spiritual knowledge, was endangered when his father became antagonistic to his devotion. The father tried to kill him in so many ways, but Prahlad tolerated him. So there may be many impediments to making advancement in spiritual knowledge, but we should be tolerant and continue our progress with determination. Simplicity means that without diplomacy, one should be so straightforward that he can disclose the real truth even to an enemy. As for acceptance of the spiritual master, that is essential. Because without the instruction of a bona fide spiritual master, one cannot progress in the spiritual science. One should approach the spiritual master with all humility and offer him all services so that he will be pleased to bestow his blessings upon the disciple. Because a bona fide spiritual master is a representative of Krishna, if he bestows any blessings upon his disciple, that will make the disciple immediately advance without the disciples following the regulative principles. Or the regulative principles will be easier for one who has served the spiritual master without reservation. Humility, pridelessness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadfastness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age and disease, detachment, freedom from the entanglement with children, with wife, home and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of the self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these are declared to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. It's a very interesting chapter, but at the same time, a little difficult to understand. But the conclusion is there, that by performing devotional service to the Lord, avyabhicharini bhakti, then the conclusion of this knowledge is reached. In this part of the purport, Krishna is talking about tolerance. Tolerance can only be possible if you are a controller. Controller means one who can control his surrounding, the physical surrounding, the intellectual surrounding, and the mental surrounding. In regards to physical surrounding, we have limited capacity. It is not that we tolerate. A prisoner cannot claim, I am tolerating the punishment given by the police. No. He is bound. There is no choice for him. There is no credit for a prisoner, giving him that credit. You know, he came out tolerating 14 years of imprisonment. You deserve it. So similarly, a conditioned soul in this world has limited capacity to tolerate. He is imprisoned by the very mind and the senses. When we are struck in the traffic, we can't say I tolerated the traffic. You had no choice. Tolerate means when you have a choice to act in this way or act in another way. The material world, with its unlimited complexities and our senses with limited capacity. So naturally we can't say, no, I'm tolerating this world. We have no choice. Absolutely no choice. So where is the facility of tolerating? It's only the mind. If we can tolerate the mind, therefore Krishna, when he opens the Bhagavad Gita is like a treasure house. And on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, right on the chariot of Krishna, Arjuna was sitting. Arjuna did not expect, neither Krishna expected to speak, neither Arjuna expected to have a philosophical dialogue. Arjuna came there looking for the treasure of wealth, the treasure of kingship for his brother, the treasure of taking revenge, the treasure of establishing dharma, morality, you know, proper government. These were the ideas when Arjuna came. Knowledge, yes, Arjuna had unlimited knowledge. He was not only student in regards to being a great archer, he was also student in regards to knowing the values of life. But he never expected there, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, that he is going to get a treasure which is way beyond the treasure which he was expecting, the treasure of knowledge. So where does Krishna open the key? Vast battlefield, you can't say, okay, this is the place. The key for treasure knowledge is in the second chapter of the 14th verse. Matra sparshastu kauntaya shitoshna sukha dukkada agama apayuna nityastam titikshasva bharata. Now Krishna gives the analogy that when there is appearance of summer and winter season and rainy season, what happens? They come and they go. It is not we tolerate them, rather we get relief when they go. You know, we have no other choice than to be afflicted by scorching sun during the summer season, you know, chilling winter during the winter time, and heavy rains during the rainy season. We are forced. But they come and they go away. Similarly, Krishna explains, my dear Arjuna, pleasures and pain are like seasons. They come and go. But a wise person, one is interested in self-realization, what he is supposed to do? He has to tolerate suffering and pleasure. And what is suffering and pleasure? Suffering and pleasure does not come by our surrounding. It comes within our mind. If one develops the capacity to handle the mind, then we actually speaking about this principle of tolerating. Otherwise we are a prisoner. We are bound to this world by our own difficulties and the reaction for our activities. So therefore, the principle of tolerating is given only mostly on the level of the mind, not on the physical level, as I said. Physical level, yes, there is very little facility. If it is hot, the modern civilization has created, switch on the fan. Right? There are certain limited capacity where we can overcome our difficulties or just tolerate it by changing our situation. But most part of it is unchangeable. We cannot, with whatever brain substance we have, whatever physical strength we have, it is unchangeable. It is like we are bound. We are staying in the prison cell and we have to go through that punishment. And we can't take credit. I tolerated. So where does it come? It comes in the mind. Therefore, we see in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks this question. Chanchalam manahi krishna pramati balavadridam tasyaham nigrahamane vayuravesu dushkuram. Sometimes even those who having all kinds of facilities, you know, they have money, they have family, they have wealth, they have house, they have got good body, they have a healthy body. Everything is there. They don't see the good side of their life. What do they see? A little provocating situation. A small discomfort. A small inconvenience. What does the mind do? The mind makes them forget all the positive things what they have and dwells on that small, insignificant negative. Negativity is as strong as poison. Positivity is like a container of sweet rice. Just imagine there is a large container of sweet rice, you know, cooling, especially in summer season. And you take in the middle afternoon and drink some sweet rice. That's very cooling. But one drop of cyanide, no, from the quantity point of view, sweet rice is large. But cyanide is very little. But just dropping that cyanide within that sweet rice, before even we could taste the sweet rice, we are dead. So that is how the negativity is so powerful. Therefore, why invariably everybody in this world, by the very mind, rather than seeing the positive, we are forced to see the negative and get affected by that. The power of positive is much inferior to the power of negative. That is but natural. The whole body is great, healthy. But if you hit your toe to the stone, you don't say, wow, my nose is so great. My eyes are like lotus petal. No, my skin is tight. No pimples. You don't think like that. We don't think like that. We don't say, oh, I don't have any gray hairs. No, my whole bunch of teeth are glittering. No. Where does our whole mind go? Our whole mind goes to that toe. Comparatively, what is toe? Very insignificant part of our body. But that toe has the power to attract all our attention, rejecting everything else good we have, and fully focused on that. So therefore the whole material world is like that. That we have unlimited facilities, but there is little problem, and that little problem has a great power to attract all our attention to negativity. So therefore, we see in this world when people say, no, how do I deal? How do I deal with my emotions? We have no control over emotions. When you go to the ocean, if you want to take swim, if you want to bathe in the ocean, there are limitless waves. Of course, not so much in Bombay. If you go to Jagannath Puri waves are very powerful. You can't swim also. If you try to swim, the waves throw you out. Or if you try to go deep inside, they take you deep inside the water. So the waves make us very uncomfortable. But you can never stop the waves. You can't say, okay, let me wait till the waves stop. No, waves never stop. The waves keep coming. One has to learn to go across the waves or bow down to the waves. In this way, we can go ahead in the ocean. So therefore the point is that In the mundane world, we cannot change situation. If there are emotions, how can you say when there is a pleasurable event? Even if you are practicing Bhagavad Gita, you are chanting Hare Krishna, you read the 13th chapter, you have read the 14th chapter, you read the 2nd chapter. When there is a pleasurable event, you know, when you experience some happiness, can you avoid your pleasure? Not possible. It's an emotion. Emotion is like a wave. It has to come. If there is unpleasant event, you cannot avoid emotions. If you hear someone very dear, near one, having some difficulties, or death of some near dear one, it is but natural to feel uncomfortable. When Arjuna, after hearing Bhagavad Gita from Krishna, all the 700 verses, of course less verses, you know, Krishna speaking the whole Bhagavad Gita, when he heard the death of his son, it is not that Arjuna said on equanimity, Krishna has spoken in the 12th chapter, you know, one should not samadukha sukha kshami. He didn't recite his 12th chapter verse. He actually was lamenting, he was condemning the whole profession of a kshatriya. Hell with this kshatriya profession, which causes such a destruction. Why? Because that emotions are not under our control. So what is expected of us? How do we respond to those emotions? We have the power to respond to those emotions. We don't have the power to control the emotions. We cannot say, I don't want happiness. No, the feelings of happiness will come. The feelings of distress will come. But then, the response to that is in our control. When there is pleasure, the intoxication of pleasure is so strong, so powerful, that people forget their responsibilities, their duties. Like during, I remember when I was very young, in those times there was no television in our town. And people would watch, listen to election news or cricket match on the transistor radio. Now when their favorite player would, you know, continue to go in duck many times, or their country would lose, so they would be very angry. And I've seen also that a person who would be so frustrated, he would take his transistor and throw it as if the transistor has gone to duck. So the transistor is an evil, or giving a bad news to him. No, transistor is what? It's an instrument, but your expression of your emotions were exhibited to a transistor which has nothing to do with your emotions. That is not the right response. Or something happens in the office, you can't respond there, but the emotions are carried to home. And just like you throw your transistor, you throw your children down, you know, mishandled wife or husband. So that is within our control. Emotions we have no control, it's but natural. Therefore in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna explains to Uddhava, just see the comparison made by the Lord in regards to one story, the story of Avanti Brahman. He says, greatest of the fool, and the most intelligent person, that is a comparison. A greatest of the fool, if he speaks harsh words to an intelligent person, the intelligent person will be affected. Krishna is making this comparison. He will be affected. But he said, I will tell you a story of a person who was not affected by such situations. And he narrated the story of Avanti Brahman. Avanti Brahman's story is narrated in the Bhagavatam 11th canto. He had such a power to analyze what kind of insult he had to endure. You know, people insult us when we are walking in the street. Hare Krishna devotees, you know, with a shaven head, you know, wearing robes and a shikha and kantimala. I remember first time when I shaved my head, you know, saffron dress, and they asked me to go and do some service. You know, it was almost like third day in the city of Bombay. I had never seen Bombay city. and walking in the saffron, I felt that the whole world is looking at me. That was not a reality. People have many things to look. But what was the assumption? What was the perception? Everybody is looking at me. Everybody is staring at me. And naturally, one of them, one of the million people, will have some kind of, you know, funny object. I would be the object of their fun. Not everybody. So one person makes one comment, you feel that the whole Bombay city is making comment against you. So therefore, there was assumed fear. This is going to happen. This is what people are going to do. And naturally people call, you know, Chanakya, whenever according to what serial is going on in the television. They would call Chanakya, they would call some Mirinda, different stuff. So therefore, being insulted by people, you can't avoid. Like Rishi Mahaprabhu was saying, few days back, when Sardarji came to him, regularly comes, and Ravan ki jai, right in his ears. He said, what can you do? If he's making those kind of comments, what can you do? You can't fight Sardar, he's a young 30-year-old and you are 70-year-old man. There's no question of arguing also. What do you have to do? You have to just walk. Continue chanting Hare Krishna and continue your life. So therefore, the response to emotion is what is important. When Arjuna's son was died, and when Dronacharya heard his son is dead, even though he was not dead, in the Mahabharata, in the same place, on the same battlefield of Kurukshetra, you know, the difference of 2-3 days, Abhimanyu was dead, Arjuna felt really down, he condemned the profession of a Kshatriya, but he never stopped his service. He continued to render service. Whether my son is dead or somebody else is dead, what is it? My duty has to continue. On the other end, Dronacharya, when he heard that his son is dead, he felt he has no more obligation to Kurus. So, where is the principle of duty? There was no principle of duty. There was no principle of loyalty. Everything was based upon my own dislike and liking. I am there because I have got my selfish motivation. When the object of my selfish motivation is not there, whom should I work for? If my son is not there, whom should I work? Very limited loyalty and with a limited person, a son. And then he sat. He became so detached, he sat there meditating, of course, because he had a very great training. He came there, sat meditating, and that was the end of it. But Arjuna did not do it. He continued to fight for the Lord. Again, I keep speaking about this. In the Mahabharata, one of the greatest villain is called as the greatest hero, Karna. Now what did Karna tell Krishna? Krishna said, why don't you join us? He said, you are the brother of Yudhishthira Maharaj. He will make you an emperor. He said, join Pandavas. And Karna said, yes, I know. I know Yudhishthira Maharaj's quality. If he comes to know that I'm his older brother, he will not only make me an emperor, but rather he will hold Chamara in his hand and wave Chamaras to me. I understand his quality. But he said, I will never give up my friendship. People appreciate that. But if you study further Mahabharata, which people, you know, neglect to understand, when he was insulted by Bhishma, there was a time when Bhishma De was asked by Duryodhana, okay, let me know who is who. What is their power? You know, like the before the election, there is, you know, some kind of data presented. Okay, which party is going to win, how many seats. They present that. So similarly, the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Bhishma was that kind of presenter. He said, who is who? And Bhishma, they gave, you know, this person is a Maharathi, he can handle 10,000 warriors, this person is this. And then Karna is sitting there, boastful, you know, having overconfidence in himself. And Bhishma said, this person, Karna, is not even a half-rathi. That means he is not capable of fighting even one person. That's a big insult. Wherein Karna was acclaimed by everybody, that is equal to Arjuna, his Vijaybo is equal to Gandiva, he has a greater capacity than Arjuna, he has got a great inexhaustible quiver, he has got great weapons as Arjuna has. So therefore they're equal match, and when you hear from your own person, commander-in-chief, saying in public, that who is Karna? He is not even half Rathi. He is not capable of fighting even a half man. And he became very angry. And Bhishma, they gave his reasons. He said, why do I say this? Because he has been cursed. When you need him the most, it happens many times when you are about to present. Devotees make very nice PowerPoint presentation to present in a nice seminar. You know, they have best of the instrument. There is a laptop is there, LCD projector is there, and you have checked it also, and when you sit, you finished your Om Ajnana Timirandasa prayer, and the computer crashes. Your PPT doesn't open only. And you are pressing all the buttons, frantically. You're being exposed. People know, okay, what kind of preparation you have made. So what is it? That when you need it the most, when it does not function, then what? Even though your computer is very capable, but when it is required to function, if it is not functioning, then what is it? It's simply a toy. It is no better than the toy. Because the value of that machine at that time is no better than the toy of a child, a toy computer. So Bhishma said, when you need him the most, he is not going to function. Why? An exhibition match is good. Exhibition match is exhibition match. It is not a real thing. You know, you shoot some arrows here and there and create some fire, create this, create that. It's wonderful. But when the real match takes place, when you need him to act, present his PowerPoint, his computer doesn't function. He'll be incapable. So therefore I call him Half-Rathi. So Karna became furious. Now if you analyze properly, he became so furious, he told, as long as this old man lives, as long as this Bhishma lives, I'm not going to fight. Is it a friendship? A loyalty means that you are loyal at every step. Hell or high water. His loyalty was what? Just imagine dealing with such 11 Akshoyani. They were not united because they loved Duryodhan. They were not united because they hated Krishna. If you study Mahabharata carefully, in the army of Kaurava, everybody had their personal agenda. Nobody was united because they liked Duryodhan. Nobody united because everybody had an agenda of hating Krishna. Their plan, if you read, it's very wonderful. That everybody had their personal agenda, but they wanted some face to show. No, this is, we are for Duryodhana's cause. No, they were not for Duryodhana's cause. They didn't want to be under subordination of Yudhishthira Maharaj. Why? Because when you come under his subordination, as long as Yudhishthira is there, as long as his son is there, you have to continue to remain subordinate. Because he will rule properly. They knew that. And with Duryodhan, what was it? You help him for some time, remove the Pandavas from the site. And once Duryodhan become the king, because he is so negligent, he is not made for ruling properly, we can have our independent behavior. So they had very selfish agenda. So if we call Karna was a loyal friend, little insult. Bhishma did not grab his collar and threw him out of the assembly hall. Just spoke few words to Karna. He said, I am not going to fight till you live. That means Karna is cursing Duryodhan's commander-in-chief that you die. What kind of loyalty is that? And withdrawing from his service. That is not proper response to the emotions what he felt. And he waited one day, second day, third day, fourth day, fifth day. And Krishna is so kind, he said, okay, as long as Bhishma is living, if you don't want to fight, come on, join us, fight for us. The Lord was giving opportunity for Karna to perform devotional service at least for a few days. But he rejected that proposal. He said no. So if you analyze properly, friendship means what? You continue to survive. We discussed this point also. You know, people give up their life if there is, you know, love between two people and there is a lot of opposition from the family. One can say, you know, just because I started loving you, there is so much of trouble from my family, so much of inauspiciousness. You are the object of inauspiciousness. But people don't do like that. They say, whatever happens, I'm willing to, like one devotee gave the example of the Prince of London, Prince of Britain. He fell in love with an ordinary girl. And the system was, the prince has to marry some princess from other king. He cannot marry ordinary person. Caste system was there in London also, in Britain also. But this man was madly in love with an ordinary girl. And the family, the royal family told him, look, if you do this, you will relinquish, you will give up everything what you will hear in the future as a future king. What do you want? You want all this property or do you want this ordinary girl? He could have said, oh, just see, because I have followed this ordinary girl, I'm losing everything. She's so inauspicious for me. He said, no, love is love. He said, love does not care for what you get, what you don't get. I have fallen in love with her. He said, I'll relinquish everything. You can imagine, British Empire was not empire in small island. In those times, that empire was almost spread all over the world. But he was willing to relinquish that. For what? He said, I prefer loving that girl and losing everything else. How much more one should be able to do for God? What is that girl? An insignificant part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but can cause such a renunciation in the heart of this prince, willing to relinquish everything. What to speak of God? Therefore, Prabhupada explains, you know, and he is the supreme whole. The power of his attraction is so great and but natural that when we try to serve and love Krishna, it is like a loving relationship between God and Krishna, and that will cause some kind of conflict in the heart of people. They will challenge, what is this you are doing? How can you do this? We are not talking about relinquish or renouncing, but then that love should not minimize our faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is Pandavas. Narad Muni explains in one place, he said, what can I speak about the Pandavas? He said, they had millions of reasons not to serve Krishna. They had millions of reasons not to love Krishna. But never even once they ever thought of loving somebody else. Thinking of serving somebody else. Or doing satyagraha against Krishna. In the Shastras, the concept of satyagraha is not there. You should be actively involved. You know, sometimes we say, you know, just in Japan there is no strike. In Indian Vedic literature also there are no strikes. The satyagraha concept was started by some of the politician leaders of India. It's a great disease. Karna was also there. Satyagraha, I'm not going to fight. He withdrew. That is not loyalty. He couldn't handle. He responded wrongly. So therefore the whole point here is that to be insulted. Today one nice devotee was saying, he met one sadhu, and this sadhu was asked by one person, he said, Swamiji, when you are worshipping the Lord, you know, people kind of insult, you know, what is this, worshipping a statue, spending so much of time worshipping the marble form. He said, yes, I know. He said, when I am worshipping the Lord, the layman, atheistic people call madman, you know, playing with dolls, you know, playing with toys. It's okay when you are small, young baby, you play with toys, that's understood. When you're grown up, when you're matured, and not only you're playing with toys, you're seriously playing with them. And not on daily, not on few days basis, on daily basis. You know, you're fasting, you're offering food to that. He said, I know people will call me mad. First day they will call me mad, but I continue worshipping. They come back again. Now they observe my madness. Now they are not calling me mad. They observe, you know, what is this? What is he doing? They keep observing. And third time they join me, becoming mad. They become part of my madness. Why? Because this madness is not ordinary madness. In this madness, there is unlimited knowledge. Therefore, Prabhupada quotes the example of Prahlad Maharaj. You know, what a power he had. Prahlad Maharaj's power to tolerate was limitless. His father's power to insult, harass and cause violence to others was also limitless. To the extent where he could scare the demigods in the heavenly planets. Indra, Chandra, Vayu, Agni. All these demigods would be scared of the moving of the eyebrows of Hiranyakashipu. He was so powerful. But when he had to handle Prahlad Maharaj, you know, baby infant, 5-year-old child, he was joyful. Prahlad's name suggests one who is naturally happy. And however Hiranyakashipu tried to disturb Prahlad Maharaj, he was not disturbed. And that caused great disturbance to Hiranyakashipu. He said, raising my eyebrows, I disturbed the demigods. And this child, mere 5 years old baby, who has got no strength, and he can't get disturbed. What is his power? Where does he get his power from? You know, physical violence, verbal violence, mental violence, every kind of violence was faced by Prahlad. He did not change. He continued to chant the holy names of the Lord. He had to suffer. It is not that the suffering was not there. The suffering was there. But how did he respond to that suffering? That's a very interesting point. He responded to that suffering with continuing to follow. He could have said, Krishna, what is this? You know, I'm serving you and so much of suffering. Many times people give up religion because they feel, because I started becoming serious in spiritual life, so many troubles started coming. This trouble, that trouble. You know, therefore I had to give up. I want to make my life normal. As if normal life means no troubles. It is abnormal life. Normal life means when the spiritual spark, the living entity, is trying to reunite with the Lord, and in the process of reuniting, like when you are driving, especially in Mumbai, in the traffic hours, it is but natural that driving is difficult. But if you want to progress, if you want to move, you don't have the choice. You have to walk so far, you have to take a train, or you have to drive. And driving is uncomfortable. But if you want to progress, if you want to go from one place to another place, one can say it is safe not to drive. But you rot, stay there only, you don't move. Because you have to continually move in this world, you know, you're forced to travel. And traveling means troublesome. But because we take that trouble, we keep on driving. What happens? With all those difficulties, we are progressing. We are going towards that place. You know, there is a ceiling and you can drive, you know, non-stop. Right? So similarly, the spiritual journey is also like driving. When we decide to drive, when we decide to travel in this journey, it is but natural there are many jams, there are traffic jams. Where does the traffic jam take place? Not on the road, in the mind. In the response of the people. In the response of our heart, our intellectual understanding. But if you stop there, oh, there is jam here, and the jam is causing such a disturbance, I don't want to travel. No, then you will not progress. You will stay there. If you want to progress, then you have to handle these difficulties. Like Draupadi, we read in the Mahabharata. People sympathize with fools and criminals. If you read in the Mahabharata, people sympathize with demons. People sympathize with Duryodhan, sympathize with Karna, sympathize with Ekalavya. But how can you not see, if you have any sense of sympathy, if you have any sense of understanding, how can you not sympathize with Draupadi? How can you not sympathize with Kunti? What kind of suffering they went through? How much suffering did Karna and Ekalavya went through? One little here and there, some so-called injustice. But if you actually study the life of Kunti and Draupadi, there is nobody, including Mother Sita also, has not gone through suffering as much as Draupadi went through. Sita's suffering was only for 10 months. That's all. And Ravana could not insult her. He kidnapped her. He separated her from Lord Ram. But he could never do any insulting act to her. Because he was cursed. If he touches her, he'll die. But with Draupadi, if you actually study, you know, she had to marry 5 husbands. You think it was an enjoyment for her? Oh, I'm getting 5 husbands to marry in those time in the Dwapar Yuga. It was a kind of nightmare to her. I said, how can I do this? Nobody has ever done this. What will people call me? She was very much conscious, coming from a very cultured family. Her husband, her father, her brothers were mortified to hear that she has to marry 5 husbands. That was the beginning of her suffering. And then it continued many, many times. You know, living in the forest for so many years. 14 years, not 13 years in the forest. 12 years in the forest, 1 year incognito. And in that incognito, how she was treated in the gambling match, how she was treated right in front of anybody, everybody. At least Sita was kidnapped when Ram was not there. So Sita had some kind of sympathy. Okay, my husband was there, he could have finished off. What sympathy Draupadi had? She was insulted not in the absence of her husbands. She was insulted in the presence of her husbands. That could be so painful. Not one person and not any husband. Dharmaraj was there, Bhim was there, Arjun was there, Nakul was there, Sahadeva was there, Bhishma was there, Dronacharya was there, everybody was there, and she's running around everybody, please, please, help me, protect me. And nobody is able to do anything. Can you imagine when you have everybody to help, but nobody is helping you, and they're talking some philosophy also. They're trying to pacify her by speaking philosophy, where the philosophy is not going to function. She's not wanting philosophy to hear. She is wanting what? Her dignity. And who is not stopping her dignity? Her very husbands are not stopping. You can imagine where she would go. Bhishma started giving some logic. You know what? You know, you have lost because husband is always the property. No, wife is the property of husband. The point is, who owns her, that is not important. What is important is that even if she is not the wife of a Pandava, as a woman, you need to protect her dignity. And whoever it is destroying her dignity need to be punished. Logic, law and Shastra doesn't work there. What works is protect her. And who came down? Krishna came down. He didn't give any answers. He didn't sit with the Kurus. He didn't sit with Bhishma. You know, let me think about it, how it works. He said, hell with your logic. Hell with your Shastra. She is in difficulty, I am going to protect her. Only Krishna came to protect after such a long difficulties. And didn't stop there. The forest life starts. Such a difficulty. Jayadrath came to kidnap her. Some other demons came to kidnap her. And then in the house of Virata, you know, the Kichak, he was 10 times more than Duryodhan. He came to insult her. And didn't stop there. When they started the battle of Kurukshetra, every son of hers were killed. Not one survived. Everybody was killed. All of her sons were killed. Just imagine, who has gone through suffering more than Draupadi? And people loosely talk about Draupadi. When that's an insult, that's an offense on the part of a Vedic culture, an Indian culture, to talk so loosely about someone who she went through so much of suffering. And who understood? Only Krishna understood. Yes, this lady has gone through so much. And what? After going through all that suffering, all her sons are killed. Arjuna and Bhima are running after the culprit, Ashwatthama, to capture him and to give him punishment. And they bring him. They bind him and bring him back. And what does he say? Draupadi says, my dear husbands, he said, don't kill him. Why? Because I am sympathizing with his mother, Droni, Dronacharya's wife. Dronacharya's wife, she is already suffering because her husband is not there. Therefore, it is unfair on our part to cause suffering to this person. Now, who can be compassionate and tolerate to that extent? That response is extraordinarily not humanly possible. It is only possible because she had a great blessing of the Supreme Personality of God. And she said, you know, forgive them. And Krishna was amazed. You know, someone is willing to forgive one who has killed all of her sons ruthlessly. Now, there was no mercy. The way he was killing, he was haunted in one sense. The destructive energy of Lord Shiva. And he became so mad and ruthless. He would not kill them with swords. He would kill very violently. And Draupadi is watching all her sons' dead bodies. First thing you become is atheist. No, that, you know, what is this? I am servant of God. I have done so much for God. And is allowing this ruthless killing of my children. She had the power, no, forgive him. So how can we not sympathize? And more suffering was endured by Kunti. You know, she is watching her daughter-in-law suffer and she was not such a mother-in-law. Good, this is what happened. This is what should happen to my daughter-in-law. Kunti, for Kunti, Draupadi was like more than her sons. You know, they had very good relationship. And she had to see and hear about all the suffering what Draupadi was going through. And what is her life? If you see Kunti's life also, from her early childhood, she was born to a king, but she had to go to somebody else's house. She was adapted by somebody else when she knew that I'll be adapted by somebody else. I remember one young lad, about 10 years old, when I was traveling in the West. He was a 10-year-old boy. I asked him, what do you want to become when you grow up? No. Usually people say, you know, I want to be this, I want to be that. Many times children say, I want to be a bus conductor. Or they say, I want to be a pilot. But this boy, a 10-year-old, 9-year-old boy, he said, I want to be a psychiatrist. I said, what? Why you want to be a psychiatrist? Of all the people. And he said, you know, 9-year-old boy, he said, you know what? He said, in my school, I see many kids. They're adapted by somebody else. You know how painful that is when they come to know they've been adapted? That I've been taken care by somebody else other than my parents. He said, I want to console them. And he said, I see so many kids have no parents. And the father is there, mother is not there, the mother is, the father is not there. Or the mother is there and father is not there. The father is there, but he's beating the mother badly. He has no nice childhood. He said, I want to help them. I was shocked. I was looking at him, you know, who is talking? Just 9-year-old boy is speaking like that. So just imagine, now it is quite common thing in Kali Yuga, these principles. But still, people suffer because of not proper affection. But it was 5,000 years ago, Kunti, she has been adapted by somebody else. She has to live in that family without the association of her parents. That was the beginning of her difficulty. And then when she is growing, Durvasmani comes, the most difficult sadhu to be taken care of. Just walks in and you have to treat him properly. If you don't serve him properly, you know, he curses you. So he comes there and the king, rather than he arranging somebody else to take care of him, he allows. He said, you go and take care. He makes his daughter take care of Durvasmani. And Durvasmani, she served Durvasmani very nicely. 8 or 9 year old girl serving Durvasmani very nicely. And Durvasmani is so pleased with her, he said, okay, I give you a few benedictions. He invoked the presence of different demigods and they'll give you celestial children. Now, what do you expect of 7, 8 year old girl getting such benediction without knowing the consequence of that benediction? It is but natural that it will be inquisitive. Somebody gives you a box, a nice packed box, and you are a 7-8-year-old child, you don't say, okay, I will not open, maybe there is bomb in this. The child is not going to think like that. He's excited. He's going to open the box and see what is there in the box. So it was like a box for Kunti, some gift given by such a great personality, and saying, what will happen if you chant this mantra? In inquisitiveness, she chanted the mantra, and there comes Sun God. And he said, you have called me, and because you have called me, the mantra has to function. But she said, come on, he said, but I'm not married, how can I do this? Just imagine if I do this, what will happen to me? What will people think about me? He said, please, he said, I've had this mantra, now I know that you have come. She was pleading, Mahabharata explained, she was begging to Sun God. He said, no, you have called for me and the mantra has to act. No, Sun God became heartless. He became ruthless. He became very mechanical. He would not understand the feelings of Kunti. And he forced. And Karna was born. What do you expect Kunti to do? Abort the child? She can't take him to the palace. So with great sympathy, great feeling, she packed the box in such a way that the child will be safe in some other place. There was no ill feeling towards that baby. She placed, you can imagine mother's heart, you know, sending her baby, a girl's problem handling her parents. She was in two dilemmas, being a young girl, trying to handle the parents if they come to know, and as a mother, she's already affectionate to her baby. What a trauma in her life. Till she got married, she could never come out of that trauma. And there, her sons were born, and her husband was dead. And she comes to the palace. When she comes to the palace, from very first day, they're plotting against Kunti. What is the plot against Kunti? There was rumor spread by Dhritarashtra and his party that say that the Pandavas are not legitimate sons of Pandu and the Kunti. By doing that, what will happen? Then the Kurus will be unrivaled kings. All over the rumors were spreading. And Kunti had to handle that. By some means, they were proven. No, they were actually the legitimate sons. Approved. And then, she is hearing all the plot against the Pandavas. Bhima being fed with poison. Their house being burned, about to be killed. And mother with her 5 sons roaming in the forest. Most of the time, Pandavas lived in the forest only begging. 13 years in the forest. Before that, when they were about to be burned, they lived in the forest for many years. And the mother is walking with them. And then this problem, 5 husbands, 5 sons had to marry 1 woman. It was not ordinary. If you see their side of the story, the Kunti and Draupadi story, then we realize, my God, what they went through. And what was the response to that? The response was they did not condemn the society. They did not condemn their surrounding as Duryodhan would do, as Karna would do, and unfortunately even Gandhari did like that. But Kunti and Draupadi never did it. Rather, what Kunti said in the Bhagavad, she spoke a very powerful verse. He said, my Lord, if all the calamities have to come, whatever calamities I've experienced in my life, let them befall again on me. Let them come again and again. Why? Because when these calamities come in my life, I have no other shelter other than your lotus feet. I become more intense in my remembrance of you. I chant more intensely, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Nobody can pray like that. But she did it. Never condemning anybody. Never condemning anybody. Never condemning the surrounding, the society. Everything is my problem. Same thing, Bharat. The son of Kaikai. What a great son for such a bad mother. It was her good fortune that she was saved by her son Bharat. And what does he say? After everybody blamed him, you know, Kaushalya was blaming him, Vashishtha was blaming him. Everybody is blaming him only because he was connected to Kaikeyi as a son. He had no hands in it. And what did he say to Shatrughna? He said, my dear brother, he said, nobody is responsible. You think the mantra is responsible? What do you expect of her? You think mother is responsible? What do you expect of her? She is my mother. Naturally, a mother will have sympathy for her own son. You think father is responsible? You think guru is responsible? He said, nobody is responsible. He said, it is my own karma. It is myself who is responsible for my suffering and the suffering of seeing Lord Ram go to the forest and suffering of seeing the death of our father. He said, I am to be blamed. So when someone exhibits that quality, we will not be able to exhibit this quality, but if we appreciate those who have gone through, not make a wrong understanding, and appreciating wrong people for not tolerating, you know, praising the demons for their bad behavior and sympathizing with them and condemning those who are supposed to be appreciated, then what happens? In the eyes of God, we become criminals. But if you are able to appreciate those who have actually gone through suffering and their response, then the ability to handle our small problems will be given by God. Sometimes people wonder, you know, how is that I was able to do it? It's beyond me. Yes, it's beyond us. Why? Because the higher power was giving us the empowerment. I give you the energy. And that is how devotional service is practiced. That is how spiritual life is practiced. Practice of spiritual life for us is like an insignificant sparrow trying to dry up the ocean. There is a story in the Purana. How can a sparrow ever dry up the ocean? Can never do that. But what sparrow did was, sparrow attracted the attention of great bird Garuda. Narad Muni told Garuda, you know what? There is a sparrow has been mistreated by this ocean and she has taken a vow to dry. You don't want to do anything? Narad Muni gave the message. And Garuda told Lord Narayana, I'm coming in one moment. And he came down and he told the ocean god, give her the justice. And ocean god was not willing to do it. He thought, this is Garuda also like a sparrow only. And Garuda said, simply by the flip of my wing, I can dry you up. And he gave some glimpse of it. Now, a slight flip and hundreds of miles, the ocean was dried. The ocean realized, you know, he's as powerful as his master Ram. Ram was about to dry up me. Similarly, he can do it. He said, okay, he gave back the X to sparrow. So our endeavor, we are like sparrow trying to practice spiritual life. And our opposition, our troubles, our obstacles are like unlimited ocean. We have no chance. But that effort of going and picking up will attract the higher power. And that higher power will give us this energy. Oh, you sparrow, you're trying? Everybody will, you know, ridicule you. Everybody will laugh at you, but not me. I'm giving you the strength. And everybody will watch. What happened? This sparrow had the power to dry up the whole ocean. We never imagined, but he did it. And the sparrow said, not me. He said, I simply did the drama of going and trying to dry up the ocean. But the Garuda came, the spiritual master and the saintly people. And by their grace, I kept on driving in all the traffic jam. And now I come to the highway, the never-ending highway. Then there is the pleasure of driving. Then you can close your eyes. Prabhupada says, bhakti, the spiritual path, wherein Guru and Krishna are involved, that spiritual path is like a vast highway. And what you could do? Close your eyes and drive as fast as possible. And it is guaranteed that there will be no accident, but rather we will reach our home, the eternal home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments?
Yeah, you ask.
Question is, how do you tolerate, even in devotional service, the success of other devotee? Again, we have no other choice. We have no other choice other than, we have the choice of feeling envious, but the things don't change. He still remains successful. History is already made. He has become successful. We have the choice of appreciating that success or feeling envious. Being envious, it's not going to change. Like someone wins during the World Cup, you know, cricket. If Pakistan wins, you have no other choice. You can't turn, you can't change the event. They are winners for that year. However much you feel angry, upset, curse them, you know, the trophy has gone to them. So similarly, in regards to devotional service also, we have to use our intelligence. Okay, this devotee has become successful. And I have the choice to be envious, you know, try to bring him down, but he's already successful. Or go and congratulate him. By congratulating him, what happens? We make a greater progress. We may not get the physical success, but we get the spiritual success, which is unseen. So again, it's most of the time you are in helpless condition. You know, it is not question of choice. It's question of helpless condition. Only if you act like this, then it is beneficial for you. If you don't act like that, further loss. He's already successful, you become envious, a greater loss for you. Anxiety, tension. No? That sleepless nights. Why is he like that? Why only him? Why not me? You know? So what happens? That his success causes your sleepless nights. So therefore, what does the Shastra say? The Bhagavad Gita says, or the Bhagavatam says, even on the battlefield, the culture of the warriors was, even the two soldiers are fighting. If they shoot, if they do something good, the opposing party had the culture to appreciate. Wow! That was a great thing. Lord Vishnu congratulated Hiranyaksha. He said, in the 8th canto, it is explained. Vamandev is telling to Bali Maharaj, Lord Varadev felt it was a great fight. You know, it was a wonderful to fight with that demon. So therefore, this is the sadhaka's dilemma. That his dilemma is that at every step there is a jam. If you criticize, you are going behind. But you can't go also. You will hit somebody behind. So what is it? You maneuver and keep continuing, progressing ahead. Because you can't. There will be people who will be more successful than you. And there will be people who don't have any facilities. You have a chance to be grateful for what Krishna has given to you. And you have a chance to grumble. Both words start from G only. You grumble or you be grateful. You have to choose which one you want to do. And I will see hundreds of people who are suffering in this world. They don't have eyes, they don't have ears, they don't have legs. They don't have facility to practice devotional service. You know, they don't understand what devotional service is. They have no concept of God. Even those who are born in Hindu family, and when they come to the temple sometime, if their friends bring them first time, they are like lost. What is it? Where did I come? Just imagine, they come, they feel lost. Anybody who comes to the temple, first thing you go down. Now that's a natural thing, but they are lost. Where did I come? So you see them, you said, my God, so you should sympathize with them. My God, so ignorant. Our case is not like that. We have been told who Krishna is. We have got to see saints. We got to interact with people. So there is always, for everybody, even the most successful person, it is not that he had no black spots. Even he has somebody where he has to handle. He would be more successful. There is no one in this world who is completely successful without a competitor. That is only Krishna. Rest everybody had to handle. So I'll stop here and glorify Krishna. Hare Krishna.